I think, though, if you reverse the circumstances, it becomes very difficult for these arguments to hold up. So I would ask you, if a foreign country bombed our air defense missiles, captured and removed our president, and blockaded our country, would that be considered an act of war?
Well, I think your question is about the and I will acknowledge you've been very consistent on all these points the entire career. So no matter who's in charge. So I will point to two things. The first is it's hard for us to conceive that an operation that lasted about 4.5 hours and was a law enforcement operation to capture someone we don't recognize as the head of state, indicted in the United States, wanted with a $50 million bounty.
My question would be, if it only took 4 hours to take our president, it's very short, nobody dies on the other side, nobody dies on our side, it's perfect. Would it be an act of war?
We just don't believe that this operation comes anywhere close to the constitutional definition of war.
But would it be an act of war if someone did it to us? Nobody dies, few casualties, they're in and out. Boom, it's a perfect military operation. Would that be an act of war? Of course it would be an act of war. I'm probably the most anti-war person in the Senate, and I would vote to declare war if someone invaded our country and took our president. So I think we need to at least acknowledge this is a one-way argument. One-way arguments that don't rebound, that you can't apply to yourselves, that cannot be universally applicable, are bad arguments.
This is my video update on this Thursday afternoon, January the 29th, coming to you from Athens, Greece. Let's talk about some news. And let's start things off with the trip by Keir Starmer to China, where he will be meeting with Chinese officials and with Xi Jinping. Keir Starmer travels to Beijing. I believe it's been 8 years since we've seen a British prime minister traveling to China. Keir Starmer is arriving in China with a huge delegation. A whole lot of businesses are traveling with 008 to China. As Keir Starmer is looking for money, he wants money, 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 give me your money. That is what he is asking of China. He's looking to make some big business deals and to get some money for a struggling Starmer administration and Starmer economy. And just a couple of weeks ago, China was enemy number one or enemy number two, probably enemy number two. Russia's probably enemy number one for 008. But China was at the top of the list as one of the UK's big enemies, the axis of evil. China's right up there in the UK's axis of evil list. And now he is traveling to Beijing to do business, following up on Canada's Mark Carney, who was the bank head of England. Isn't that interesting, huh? Maybe the globalists are trying a new tactic, moving things around, shifting their view of things and saying, you know what, let's engage with China, perhaps, as the globalists. Let's court China, see if there's something there for us as the world shifts to multipolar. So they send Carney, they send Starmer. Starmer in Beijing. He was with, let me get a list of the companies. He was with executives from HSBC, GSK, Jaguar, Land Rover, Airbus, and others. Xi was very, very hospitable to Starmer, very kind and hospitable to 008, even though 008 has been very mean to Xi Jinping and to China. He said some very nasty stuff about China and about Xi. Xi was the good host. And Chinese social media is actually saying that that perhaps Xi is being too nice, too hospitable to Starmer, given everything that he has said about China. Anyway, Keir Starmer is in Beijing. It's a big deal. And we'll follow up on this meeting, see what happens. See if Starmer gets the business and the money that he's looking for. We have Al-Jilani in Moscow. Al-Shara Al-Jilani. Bizarro Alensky in Moscow, his second trip to Moscow, to the Kremlin, to meet with Putin. I have to admit, Al-Shara's suits are pretty top-notch. He is wearing some really, really nice suits, that Al-Jilani. He's been legitimized. Not elected, not by the people, but he's been put in place as president of Syria, and he's been legitimized with his meetings to D.C. to meet with Trump at the White House, his second meeting to Russia. The United States and Russia, they're trying to figure out what to do with Syria. How are things going to play out in Syria since the regime change of Assad? And now we have the defeat of the Kurds in Syria, backed by Turkey's Erdogan. And Erdogan has been speaking with Trump. Actually, I think he spoke to Trump just yesterday or 2 days ago. And of course, Erdogan is always speaking with Putin. Erdogan is the puppet master pulling the strings of Al-Jilani, as is the United States and Israel, but it's really Erdogan who's putting a lot of backing behind Al-Shara Al-Jilani. At least that's my take of things. And Erdogan has been able to deal with the Kurds in Syria, something that he has been wanting to do for such a long time. For the Russians, you're looking at their base in Syria. That's what they're going to be discussing, the Taurus base in Syria. I think I got the name correct. But I don't think Al-Shara Al-Jilani is going to last too long. I don't know. Something tells me that wherever he goes, no matter how nice he dresses, and no matter how legitimized he's become from being placed as the leader of Syria, even though once upon a time he headed Al-Qaeda HTS al-Nusra and had a 10 million bounty on his head. Now he's become the legitimate leader of Syria. Something tells me that he's not going to last long, because wherever he goes, wherever he's meeting with, whether he's meeting with Trump or with Putin, it's just bad optics. It's really, really bad optics. And I think it leaves everyone with a very bad taste when they see Al-Jilani meeting with their respective president or prime minister. It left a bad taste in the mouths of many, many Americans who did not like to see Al-Jilani in the White House hanging out with Trump. Not a good look. And a lot of Russians do not like to see Al-Jilani in the Kremlin meeting with Putin. Of course, we all understand the realities of the situation and the whole realpolitik thing, but I don't know. Something tells me that the guy is just too toxic. He's going to serve his purpose, and eventually he will be removed. That's just my feeling of things. We'll see. We will see. So we have Starmer in Beijing, we have Al-Jilani in Moscow, and we have Rubio in the Senate. And the Secretary of State is giving an update on foreign policy to the Senate, or gave an update on what is going on in the world to the Senate. And he talked about Venezuela. He talked about Iran, and he talked about Project Ukraine. and on Iran. Basically, Rubio said that the U.S. absolutely has the right to preemptively strike Iran. And it could happen. A preemptive strike against Iran. The military forces are there, and they are building up for some sort of action against Iran. On Venezuela, Rubio had a really interesting exchange with Rand Paul. And Rand Paul really questions the Trump administration, Rubio's handling policy of Venezuela, specifically the kidnapping of Maduro, and the fiction that the whole thing was about drugs, narcotics, and narco-terrorism, and blowing up boats and stuff like that. And Rand Paul basically pushed back on all of the fake narratives from the Trump administration with regards to Venezuela. And Rand Paul was saying that this is an act of war, regime change act of war. And of course, Rubio was saying, no, this is about U.S. interests. It's about dealing with the narco-terrorist regime of Maduro. And Rubio actually did say, to his credit, if you want to phrase it like that, to his credit, he did actually say that that they've been upset, angry with Maduro, because he's been dealing with Russia and Iran and China, and the United States did not like that, and the U.S. was unable to work with Maduro or to stop Maduro in having good relations with Russia and with China and Iran, and so he had to be removed because he was not working in the best interests of the United States. But Rand Paul's point was, look, you went into the country. And it doesn't matter if the operation was 10 minutes or 10 days. You went in there and you kidnapped the president of a country. And it doesn't even matter if you think the elections were legit or not legit. That's not the point. You went into Venezuela, you kidnapped the president, and you brought him here to the United States. That is indeed some type of an act of war. And Rubio was making out as if, no, it's not an act of war. And then Rand Paul made the excellent point by telling Rubio, if a country did this in the United States, did the same thing to the United States, if they came to the United States and in 10 minutes, they swept up President Trump, kidnapped President Trump and took him back to their country, would we not see this as some sort of an act of war? And Rand Paul is 1,000% spot on. Let me find Rand Paul's quote if I have it handy. If a foreign country bombed our air defense missiles, captured and removed our president, and blockaded our country, would that be considered an act of war? Yes, it is an act of war, absolutely. Absolutely. So that was an interesting exchange between Paul and Rubio. And Rubio then talked about Project Ukraine. He said that Witkoff and Kushner will not be attending the next meeting, which is going to take place once again in Abu Dhabi, in the UAE. And maybe U.S. representatives will be there. Most likely there will be some U.S. representatives there, but it will not be Witkoff and Kushner. I believe the meeting is scheduled for this Sunday, February the 1st. But Rubio made it out as if the next talks, these talks that are coming up, are going to be bilateral talks between Ukraine and Russia. So that was what Rubio said about the meetings. He also said that they've made significant progress on getting close to some sort of a peace deal. The one issue that still remains, according to Rubio, is the territory issue. Donetsk specifically is what is preventing Russia-Ukraine peace deal. So Rubio said that as well. And on security guarantees, he made it out as if the security guarantees for Ukraine and the United States have been pretty much agreed on, which is something that Alensky has been saying. Alensky has been saying that the United States and Ukraine are 100% in agreement with the security guarantees that they've put together. But Rubio said that the United States would not be putting boots on the ground in Ukraine. They're aligned with Ukraine on the security guarantees, but the actual troops that will be heading to Ukraine, if there is a deal and there is some sort of a ceasefire, would not be American, but would mostly be French. That was what Rubio was saying or hinting at, a French troop presence in Ukraine if there is some sort of a deal or a ceasefire or something like that. Macron would be on the hook to send French troops into Ukraine. And of course, Russia has responded once again. Lavrov, I think Lavrov already has issued a statement once again saying for the 1,356 millionth, gazillionth time, there will be no collective West, NATO, U.S., French, U.K., whatever, troop presence in Ukraine before a deal, after a deal. It's not going to happen. That was Lavrov's statement again. So I think that's Rubio, what he said to the Senate, or what he said about Project Ukraine. How about Mertz? How about BlackRock Mertz? Who told the media, he was at some event or making some sort of statement or speech, and BlackRock Mertz was asked about Ukraine's fast track into the EU, getting into the EU by 2027. And BlackRock Mertz said it's not going to happen. Must be some sort of event is going to take place here. That's how it looks. Got the police who are arriving. Something's going to happen here at the Olympic Stadium. Anyway, BlackRock Mertz, let's cross, why not? He is saying no to Ukraine being fast-tracked into the EU, which left me a bit stunned, actually very, very surprised at this statement from Mertz. I would have thought that BlackRock Mertz, given all the money that could be pouring into Ukraine if it's fast-tracked into the EU, with BlackRock taking an advisory role in all of the money that could be invested in the EU, I was under the impression that BlackRock Mertz would be pushing for a Ukraine fast track into the European Union, but that's not the case, and I can't figure out why. Why, oh why, is BlackRock Mertz not pushing for Ukraine's fast track into the European Union? I can't figure this out. Can you guys figure out why? Why Mertz is not backing Ukraine's fast track into the EU? BlackRock Mertz, what has BlackRock told him? Is BlackRock telling Mertz, you know what? The whole prosperity deal, the $800 billion, the $1.5 trillion, forget about it. It's never going to happen. Let's move on to other investments. Let's take a look at BRICS in China and building up Europe's own military will invest in all of that. Forget about Project Ukraine. I don't know. I can't figure out BlackRock Merz's position here. What's happening? And I think the foreign minister of Luxembourg, he also issued a statement today saying no fast track for Ukraine into the European Union. They're not going to get in by 2027. Are the European Union leaders ditching Project Ukraine? Is that what they're about to do? Is there no more money in it because they realize that Russia's going to win and whatever money they sink into Project Ukraine, it's not going to make a difference, or it's not going to be able to get out of Ukraine so that the washing machine can spin and operate? I don't know. I can't figure it out. Maybe you guys can figure it out. I don't like it. I do like it. I like it a lot. I like this video. Hit the like button. And what an upside down world we live in. When we have Mark Carney and Kaya Kallas ushering in the new and improved world order for the globalists, or announcing the beginning of something new for the globalists as they announce the end of the international rules-based order, which according to Mark Carney never really existed. We were just pretending, but boy, did we make a lot of money. We did really well off of pretending that there was some sort of an international rules-based order. That's what Mark Carney said at the WEF, his now infamous speech at the WEF. Anyway, Stunning and Brave, she was speaking at some sort of a defense meeting, and she said that the whole transatlantic thing, it's over. We're still friends with the United States, we're still allies, we're still buddies and pals, but the whole rules-based order, yeah, that's done. That's what Stunning and Brave said. Yeah, I wonder if she can spell international rules-based order. But anyway, that was a speech from Kaya Kallas. She said that Europe is no longer Washington's center of gravity. Wow, that's quite a statement from Kaya Kallas. Europe is no longer Washington's center of gravity. So her message was that the EU now has to build its own big military. The EU is on its own. Yes, the US is an ally and friend, but it now has to look after its own well-being, and it has to build a big military to defend itself. So that means big money being spent on building a big European military. I'm not so sure if that means with NATO or without NATO. But Kallas also said that perhaps given the end of the transatlantic partnership, that perhaps the EU needs to do away with the whole voting system that is currently in place, which needs all of the EU member states to vote on certain policies and issues. A unanimous vote needs to happen in order to pass certain things, and it's time to move on to a simple majority type of system. That was her general message, Stunning and Brave, Kaya Kallas. And then she talked about her childhood in Estonia. When I was a little girl in Estonia, when I was going to school in Estonia, the bell used to ring once, and that was one warning, and then it used to ring twice because they didn't have mobile phones back then. And then the third time a bell would ring, that meant that things this was a big warning. I think she said it was a big warning about something about to happen. I forgot exactly what she said. When the bell would ring three times, the third ring meant that this is a serious warning. And she said that Europe, the EU, well, it's the third bell ringing. That was her point. It was gibberish and gobbledygook, but also quite astute, quite intelligent, quite revealing, quite personal, coming from stunning and brave Kaya Callas. I liked the story. I liked it. I found it quaint and charming, and very, very revealing, very personal. It really gave us good insight into the leader, the person, the childhood of Stunning and Brave, which I thought was very endearing. Oh, boy. Anyway, let's move on. And it was raining hard just a couple of hours ago. But let's talk about Greenland, Denmark, actually. Greenland and Denmark. Let's talk a little bit about Greenland and Denmark. And it looks like, according to various polls that have come out, that the whole Greenland thing has helped Prime Minister Frederiksen. She's gotten a Greenland bump in the polls. They did not do very well in the last elections. And things were not looking good for her and her party with support. But because she stood up to Trump, or at least that's how they're making it out to be, I don't know how allowing Mark Rutte to give up parts of Greenland is standing up to Trump. But anyway, that's what they're making it out to be. She's now gaining in the polls because she stood up to the U.S. president by allowing Mark Rutte to negotiate parts of Greenland to become U.S. territory. So she's being rewarded for her bravery standing up to U.S. President Trump. I like it. I like that. Mette Frederiksen. She's a tough lady. She's a tough negotiator, that Mette Frederiksen, allowing Mark Rutte to negotiate for her. Negotiations are going to begin. I read that today, that there are some negotiations that are going to happen between the United States, Greenland, and Denmark that are being prepared. And Greenland is already coming out with their red lines. I guess their red line is where we don't want the United States to annex us. I guess that's their red line. But I did read that something is being put together. What else? Trump, a couple of days ago, said that Cuba will soon collapse. He said the island nation will not be getting any oil from Venezuela, and therefore its economy will implode. It will collapse. And that will be game over for Cuba. And I think now we can do... Can we do a clown world? Yeah, I think we can get to a clown world. I don't think I have any other news that I want to get to for today. Oh, we did have an exchange of fallen soldiers between Russia and Ukraine. Once again, the numbers are exactly as they were from the last exchange that took place, which was end of 2025, like end of November, early December. That was when we had the last exchange of fallen soldiers. And in this exchange, the numbers are pretty much the exact same, if not the exact same. 1,000 Russian soldiers returned to Russia from Ukraine, and 1,000 Ukrainian soldiers from Russia to Ukraine. So 1,000 Ukrainian soldiers and 38 fallen Russian soldiers from Ukraine to Russia. So once again, 1,000 to 38. 1,000 Ukrainian soldiers to Ukraine, 38 fallen Russian soldiers returned to Russia. I think we've had 13 or 14 exchanges, and the numbers have been this exact amount, this exact ratio, 1,000 to 30, 1,000 to 40. For the past year and a half. I would say that is a pretty, and I know all the reasoning as to why these numbers are like that, and I accept it. If your army is advancing, then they're picking up the fallen soldiers and all of that stuff, which is an admission, by the way, that one side is advancing and one side is retreating. But I understand all of the rationale and the reasoning as to why these numbers are the way they are. But a year and a half of these numbers being at this ratio, I think that's got to tell us something about the casualties. Anyway, that's an update there. And let's do a clown world, and then I'm going to shoot some hoops. No, I'm not going to shoot some hoops. If I had a basketball with me, I would shoot some hoops. 3-on-3, road to glory. Road to glory. Yeah, this is legit. This is a legit free throw distance. Absolutely. All right, let's do a clown world. We'll wrap this video up. Let's start with, or let's stay. Let's start and stay with Keir Starmer in Beijing. We'll go full circle, starting with Keir Starmer in Beijing, and we'll do a clown world with Keir Starmer in Beijing. And no one's commenting on, or at least I've seen a couple of posts on X commenting on the way Keir Starmer was walking as he exited his plane, as he landed in Beijing. Kind of a weird, funny walk from 008. It wasn't the walk of a confident, strong prime minister. It was kind of a strange walk. It's like a penguin walk in a way. I don't know. Maybe he was tired from the trip. I don't know. It happens. But it wasn't the strong, assertive, tough, physically and mentally tough Keir Starmer that all of us have come to know and to respect and to admire. You know the guy that I'm talking about, right? I think everyone in the UK that's watching this video knows the man and the legend and the myth that I'm talking about. You know that Keir Starmer that when he gets off a plane, you know, he's assertive. He's standing tall. He's tough. He means business. A real leader. It wasn't that Keir Starmer. For some reason, he was kind of walking like a penguin off of the plane. I understand. It's a long trip. It's a long trip. And then Keir Starmer, once he got to the hotel or wherever he was, the embassy, he got some rest. And then they went out to eat. And they went to eat at the Yunnan restaurant in Beijing, which from what I understand is a very popular restaurant. I believe it's in the embassy district of Beijing. Very, very popular, especially with all of the diplomats and the foreign dignitaries. And he went to eat at this restaurant. And this is the restaurant that Janet Yellen, when she visited Beijing under the Biden administration, she went to this restaurant to eat. And remember the stories about the magic mushrooms? Remember those stories with Janet Yellen eating at this restaurant and perhaps being high, or getting high from eating these special mushrooms or something like that? And she was acting very bizarre when she met with Xi Jinping. So I don't know. Let's see how Keir Starmer acts as he meets with Xi Jinping. Will he look high on mushrooms or not? Anyway, that's the clown world. I will end it there. TheDuran.locals.com. We are on X and Rumble and Telegram. Go to the Duran shop, pick up some merch. 26% off everything in the Duran store. There is a link in the description box down below. I will see everyone tomorrow. Take care.